Hey, it's John from CityCast. If you're in the mood to pamper yourself a little bit this week while supporting cruelty-free products, you should check out Bon Coeur Home and Wellness. It's the best place in Portland to find everything from chic home decor to cannabis accessories. They've got a curated collection of vegan and cruelty-free home goods and wellness products because their name is French for kind heart, after all. You'll get a 20% discount on your first order when you sign up for emails this week at boncoeur.net. That's boncoeur.net and use the code BONCOEURCITYCAST20.
You might have heard that the multinational company Live Nation Entertainment recently locked in an exclusive contract to begin hosting live music at Providence Park. And now they're in talks with a local developer to partner on a new 3,000-person capacity music venue on the Willamette's East Bank. Now, though a waterfront music venue might sound freaking awesome, local music advocates, including venue owners, are worried that this might mean the end of independent music in Portland. So today on CityCast Portland, we're talking with Music Portland board member Jamie Dunphy about why so many people in the local music scene are raising the alarm and saying that Live Nation-owned venues are a terrible fit for Portland. It's Thursday, March 28th. I'm Claudia Meza, and this is what Portland's talking about. Why is everyone up in arms about Live Nation?
Well, Live Nation has spent the last number of decades consolidating power and growing into the largest entertainment monopoly that exists. And Portland is the last independent music city in America. We are the only major music city that does not have a Live Nation-owned music venue. We are proud of the fact that we are the largest independent music scene, and Live Nation has been targeting Portland for over a decade, trying to come in and build a venue here. And they recently, about a year ago, announced plans to build a 3,500-person music venue along the Willamette River in the Central East Side.
Yeah, but isn't that the only way we're going to get Beyonce and Taylor Swift to come back?
You know, there is absolutely a market gap here. Portland has venues that can hold small emerging artists, medium developing artists, and artists at the height of their career. We do not have a lot of spaces in between. We don't have anything from about 3,000 to about 6,000 people. So Portland needs new infrastructure, and we need that kind of vibrancy in order to make sure we have the entire spectrum of talent and musicians coming to Portland. But Live Nation doesn't operate in a way that supports the entire spectrum. Live Nation really prioritizes their artists, and they do not have any space for local competition. They're a business first, and they have a proven track record of coming into independent music scenes and absolutely decimating the local competition. And that's why Portland is up in arms about this. We absolutely want Taylor Swift and Lizzo and Beyonce to come to Portland, but we want that to be with us, not to us.
Yeah, you keep saying that they come through and decimate. Like, what do you mean by that? Like, how does Live Nation tend to work through local music ecosystems?
Yeah, I've spent the last 9 months or so talking to musicians, venue owners, and promoters in music cities across the country. And in cities like Chicago, Des Moines, Nashville, Austin, Milwaukee, Wisconsin, Live Nation has a playbook. They come in, they use their enormous capital position, their ability to demand, their exclusivity with contracts, their infrastructure with Ticketmaster, and they start getting a foothold into a local market. They start getting exclusive agreements to be able to promote shows in publicly owned stadiums. They get exclusive rights to develop along a riverfront in a major city on a piece of publicly owned land. They start buying up smaller venues, even with the intention of specifically closing them to reduce competition. They put local artists into exclusivity and proximity contracts. And it directly impacts the ability of the local independently owned music venues and the local independent musicians to actually support their own careers. It is a pretty standard business textbook, but it's not happening in the rest of the music industry. So Live Nation is unparalleled in terms of their monopoly power and the way that they use really unscrupulous business practices to completely control independent music markets.
Yeah, so let's talk about what they're planning for Portland. Because all I heard was, hey, the Providence Park deal, which I was just like, cool, hooray, somebody's doing something, you know? But then I heard about, like, oh, they want to buy this new venue on the Central East Side. Can you kind of explain both deals or, like, both proposition, so someone who just walked into the dilemma right now understands what's going on?
Yeah. The first step is that they work with a sports team to get exclusive rights to produce a stadium concerts in a publicly owned stadium. As folks likely know, Providence Park, where the Timbers play, is a publicly owned stadium that is used by the Peregrine Sports and the Portland Timbers. They recently announced that there will be a series of 8 concerts coming back to Portland in the stadium, which is phenomenal. Stadium rock has been absent from Portland for decades. Live Nation is the only organization right now that had the capital on hand to be able to offer to pay for all the infrastructure upgrades. There were local promoters who were actively in negotiation with Peregrine Sports to try and get access to that same stage space. But Live Nation was able to use their enormous size to take over that contract. So now there will be 8 stadium concerts coming to downtown Portland, which is phenomenal. But all of the profits from that will be siphoned out of our community to Live Nation, who does not have a footprint here yet. Mm-hmm. The other side of it is an announcement that came a little over a year ago. There is a development happening in the Central East Side to redevelop 3 vacant blocks along Water Avenue. These are the blocks that are immediately north of the Hawthorne Bridge. They're called the ODOT blocks. The proposal, as of right now, is for 1 full city block to be a 3,500-person music venue that is owned and operated by Live Nation. This piece of land is owned by Prosper Portland. Prosper Portland is the city's economic development agency. So this is a public piece of land. And Prosper Portland is actually going to be retaining ownership of the dirt underneath the venue for 100 years.
What?
They will be receiving $130,000 a year in lease payments for the right to have this music venue on this, which is not an enormous amount of payment, but that is a steady stream of income that is going to be coming back to the city because of this music venue. We do not have a 3,500 capacity music venue in the city right now.
Mm-hmm.
The infrastructure would be phenomenal. We just don't want Live Nation as an operator because they have shown over and over again who they are. So that is the proposal as of right now. It hasn't broken ground. They haven't gone in for permits. And in fairness, Beam Development has been a great partner in having these conversations with us about the concerns we have, but they are still moving forward with this proposal as of right now.
Yeah. You know, the reason I heard about that possible Central East Side location is because some of the venue owners were talking about it, like through circles, and it just like got to me. And I was concerned immediately. I mean, it's not the same size, but I mean, that's kind of close to where the Doug Fir is now moving to. And so it would be terrible if the Doug Fir goes through all of that, all the renovations, everything, and then they get shut out because Live Nation has a structure there now.
Absolutely. So Live Nation is proposing a 3,500-person venue. That would be 2,000 people standing and 1,500 people seated in a mezzanine level on the second level. If Live Nation decided to close the mezzanine, they could now go after 2,000-person shows, and they could book shows that would have gone to the Crystal Ballroom, Revolution Hall, or to the Roseland. These are our pillar or institutions that are not huge, but they are necessary for our ecosystem. And Live Nation has done this in other communities where they divide their larger room to be able to get smaller shows. Additionally, what Live Nation has done in every community where they build a venue is they either build or acquire a secondary, smaller venue, somewhere in the 200 to 500 person range. If they do that, absolutely, this is now direct competition with the Doug Fir.
Mm-hmm.
This is now direct competition with actually close to a dozen music venues that are within a mile of where this is being proposed to be built.
Yeah. Okay, well, let's take a quick break here. And when we come back, why local venue owners wouldn't come on the show to talk about their concerns. So let's talk about these local venue owners, because they're really worried about this. Like, why aren't they speaking up more? Like, I would imagine there's a lot of them. They're really obviously very well organized. And we actually, this is crazy. We actually tried to get some on so they could speak to us. And they pretty much refused. They were just like, hey, man, we cannot talk on this for political reasons. So like, why are they so scared to speak up?
Live Nation is already operating here in Portland. And Live Nation also uses Ticketmaster. And Ticketmaster has exclusive agreements with a dozen venues in the city as well. If these music venues start speaking out against this corporation, Live Nation has demonstrated in other communities that they will simply not put those shows in their venues anymore. Live Nation is actively vindictive about people who are talking about them. And I can tell you that representatives from Live Nation have been talking about me. I'm not a music venue owner. I'm not even an active musician anymore. I have been doing this because I care about this city, and I was a musician throughout my career. And I have been trying to lead the efforts because I'm disconnected from this, because I don't have any sort of financial institution, but I deeply care about this issue. And so I've taken this on, and the Music Policy Council has taken this on. We're the only ones who can right now. Live Nation has absolutely controlled the dialogue on this, and they are controlling the players who are already hurting. No music venue is doing well in this city, and if they were to lose additional business because of this vindictive corporation, that would be the end of those music scenes as well.
Yeah. I mean, is LA like a Live Nation place?
Yeah, absolutely.
Okay. So here's the deal. And this is, I'm just going to like, because, you know, I've also come from the music scene. The music scene's going to survive no matter what. I'm just going to say it, Jamie. What's not going to survive are venues, because musicians will always find a place to play. They'll even start their own venues. You know what I mean? And they're going to be raggedy and weird, and they're going to be shut down by the fire station. But what I'm saying is, like, I'm not worried about the music scene. What's not going to survive are these medium to small business owners. And I just want to clarify that, because I feel like sometimes with advocacy, it could just like blow up and it's like, no more music in Portland. It's like, no, that's going to be music in Portland. Like, Holocene isn't going to shut down. Like, there's still going to be dance nights, because I grew up in LA and dang, we had a good ass music scene. You know, sure. We had this smell. We had, if anything, what it does sometimes is it pushes these really interesting venues to like show up. Because here's something we have been missing, Jamie. We don't have any all ages venues. So I'm just being the other guy.
And I will say, I completely disagree with you.
All right, tell me why.
I will point by point tell you why. The city of Portland right now has more music venues and more professional musicians than the cities of Austin or Nashville. If you looked at it 5 years ago, that was not the case. The number of music venues, you're absolutely right. The competition among the built environment is number one. But the competition among musicians is number two. Part of the problem that you are seeing, the lack of all ages music venues, for example, is not based off of business practices. Partially, it's based off of regulation. The OLCC makes it almost impossible for an all ages music venue to be able to be licensed in any sort of legal way. And the real estate practices that have been happening in our community are making it impossible for those spaces to exist. And additionally, the increased density that's happening in this community means that it's harder for those places that used to be a little bit punk rock to be able to be punk rock. I used to play concerts at the back of an old bike shop on Foster, and now there's a row of townhouses directly behind it. If we don't nurture the pipeline of all of the options for venues and musicians and try to be intentional about protecting what is already here, market forces will move us away from the broader music scene. And you will see that happen, and like it's happening in Austin and in Nashville. Nashville has fewer than half of the number of music venues it had a decade ago. Additionally, if we don't intentionally nurture that pipeline of artists, all the way from all ages, all the way through to Beyonce, then we can't have a music scene. Because what happens with Live Nation when they come in is they don't accept new openers, they don't accept local artists, and when they do, they put proximity clauses in their contracts. This has happened repeatedly. I've talked to a number of artists who were invited to play a festival in Bend that was a Live Nation festival, and they had to sign a 200-mile radius clause, meaning that for a full year after their concert, they weren't allowed to play in Portland, even though they are Portland musicians. Hmm. So we need to be intentional about nurturing that. Those organic punk rock music roots of Portland, of what has been happening for the last 60 years in this city, simply cannot happen anymore. And it's what happens in every other major city. This is an ongoing problem. And it's not one that Live Nation has started, but it is one that Live Nation is absolutely going to exacerbate.
So Do you think this is going to happen no matter what?
I don't think that this Live Nation venue is going to happen no matter what. I think that there are two situations here. I'm not a developer, and I know that finding financing for a three-block development is hard right now. And I know that Beam Development is trying to make this project happen. But I'm skeptical that it's going to happen in the best of circumstances. And I also don't think it's inevitable that Live Nation is going to come, even if the project does move forward. I think that if the music community organizes and if the music community pushes back hard enough, that we can make it uncomfortable for them to come here and do the kinds of things they do in every other community. I think that we can speak with one voice, we can get local artists to get on the record and care about this, and we can get elected officials on the record to care about this as well. We could maybe set the terms by which Live Nation comes here. They've already conceded to a number of things, in fairness, and we want them to concede to a few more things.
What have they conceded to?
So the Keller Auditorium had a specific concern. The Keller Auditorium is about 3,200 people, and this new music venue is about 35. The Keller is, however, a fully seated venue. They have infrastructure chairs, you know, and there are basically telescoping chairs, kind of like the old high school bleachers where they would sort of fold into the wall. There are chairs that can be folded out and make this new Live Nation venue into a seated venue. And the Keller was worried that if they had proper seats, that would directly compete. So to Live Nation's credit, they said in writing, they were not going to install any sort of chairs for the main 2,000 body area of their venue. So that's great. That is a concession. They also said on the record, though I am skeptical of this, that they were not planning to subdivide their venue and go after the 2,000 cap shows like I was mentioning. They've said that in other cities. They've said that in Houston, and they said that in Austin, and then they did it. They did say it on the record in front of the mayor's office. So I'm going to hold them to that. And there are a couple of other things that we would love to see that would maybe make us feel more comfortable to have Live Nation come here if they are going to come here. But my preferred option is we do want a venue, and we have interested parties in this city right now who are actively putting together an offer to try and just ask Beam Development to swap Live Nation out and have it be a local option. And I would think that that would be a win for everybody. We do want that investment, but we simply want local control. And I know that there is an interest among some of the sort of bigger players in our independent music scene to try and make that happen. And hopefully over the next few months, we can make a conversation happen with Beam Development.
That's cool. And if anyone's listening and they're like, fire it up, is there anything that they can do to help?
The easiest way to get involved immediately is to go to musicportland.org and reach out and get in contact with us. We have a whole section of our website dedicated to what's going on about Live Nation. And come out to some events and come out to our first Monday events where we are talking about this.
Well, thank you so much, Jamie. Appreciate your time and the work that you're doing behind this. I hope that these medium to small venue sized owners are able to fight for their space, because I personally love going to Revolution Hall. It's like a little Disneyland for adults.
Absolutely. You know what I mean? Absolutely. I mean, live music in general is transformational. It's why we love this place. You know, the buildings and the restaurants are all very nice in Portland, but we stay here because this city is interesting and there is a lot of interesting things going on. And part of our identity is that we are our own thing. But Portland is not like any other city, and we have to preserve that. It's not something that can happen organically anymore. The old Portland, where you could work 20 hours a week as a barista and it rained all the time, so you stayed inside and played a guitar and that was how you became your musician, those days are over. And the business community, the government, and the musicians themselves need to start acting like this is something worth preserving. Otherwise, it simply will go away.
Well, thank you, Jamie.
Thank you, Claudia.
Just a note that we did reach out to representatives of Live Nation Entertainment for comment, but did not receive a statement from them by the episode's scheduled publication. And now for some events happening this weekend. Portland Art Museum's new exhibition, Future Now, Virtual Sneakers to Cutting Edge Kicks, which features nearly 60 futuristic footwear designs, is opening this Saturday. And you guys, the pictures look so cool. Just a reminder that the museum has also brought back its first Thursday free admission day. And if you missed the cherry blossoms on the waterfront, the Wooden Shoe Tulip Festival has started and is running through May 5th. Also, the Reed College Library is hosting its very first zine fest to celebrate independent publishing and zine making this Saturday from 11 a.m. to 4 p.m. It features workshops and a keynote by special guest James Spooner of the graphic novel The High Desert and director of the Afropunk documentary. And just in time for Easter weekend, Kinkfest, an annual three-day event celebrating sexual diversity and the BDSM fetish and leather communities, is coming to Portland Expo Center starting this Friday. Oh wait, you know what? Dang it, sold out. Never mind. That would have been an incredible Easter Sunday. You could have started off at Kinkfest, ended it at the Grotto. Well, maybe next year. For even more local events and news, sign up for our daily newsletter, Hey Portland. We'll throw all links in the show notes. Well, that's all for today here on CityCast Portland. Thanks so much for listening. We'll be back tomorrow morning with more from around the city. Until then, see you at Slim's.